Welcome to Canusa Street, a podcast at the intersection of the issues and policies between Canada and the United States. Here are your hosts, Beth Burke and Chris Sands.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Canusa Street. I am Beth Burke with the Canadian American Business Council, joined by my ever wonderful, fabulous, fantastic co-host, Christopher Sands of the Woodrow Wilson Center.
Hi, Beth. I don't know. You're going to run out of adjectives for me soon, but I send them all back to you. You're fabulous, wonderful, and then some.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to see you today, Chris.
It's great to see you, but on a sort of special episode for Canusa Street, remembering Brian Mulroney, who recently passed away. And we've talked about how do we honor someone who made such big contributions to Canada-U.S. relations. And I think our guest today is the perfect person to help us with that.
I couldn't agree more. You know, when you look at those who have put their fingerprint and helped shape and mold the Canada-U.S. relationship, there are very few who rise to the level of the former prime minister. So really looking forward to hearing stories and sharing memories. So why don't I turn it to you, Chris, to introduce our fabulous guest today.
Well, our guest today is Jean Charest, the former premier of Quebec, the former leader of the Progressive Conservative Party of Canada. And what some people may not know, particularly our younger listeners, is that he was first elected to the House of Commons in 1984. And at the age of 28, he became Canada's youngest cabinet minister as Minister of State for Youth, appropriately enough. And in 1991, he was named Minister of the Environment, Minister of Consumer and Corporate Affairs, and Registrar General, and became Deputy Prime Minister of Canada in 1993. Jean Charest is an amazing figure, but it is his youth here that helps, because he was Brian Mulroney's youngest cabinet minister. He knew him very, very well and stayed in touch with him when he was Premier of Quebec. So it's an honor to welcome you, Premier Charest, back to Canusa Street. I wonder, were your immediate thoughts when you heard that Brian Mulroney had passed?
And thank you, Chris, and thank you, Beth, for hosting me and offering me the opportunity to share some thoughts. I saw Brian Mulroney on the Saturday before he passed away, and he and I had chatted over the phone, and he wanted to see me. He was in Florida, and I decided on Wednesday, my wife, Michelle, was flying down, that I'd just fly down with her and see him. So I saw him on Saturday evening. And he was certainly very alert, but not in very good physical shape. Over the years, he had had some difficulties. He had lost a lot of weight, a lot of muscle mass. He had difficulty walking, and he was very Irish. I mean, we're going to talk about it. His mood would go back and forth to a darker sense of things. And he said to me during the conversation that he didn't think he would get through the year. And my response was to remind him that this year is the 40th anniversary of his election. And we always like to kid each other a lot. And I said to the prime minister, I said, you know, I got you elected 40 years ago. And he laughed and he said, and I told him, you were an ingrate. Never recognized that. And so we agreed that we needed to organize a few events and to celebrate his legacy. So when he left, you know, what's been impressive is the outpouring of affection for him. He was a controversial during a good part of his political career and took up some very unpopular issues. And here we are in 2024, and there's this great outpouring of affection for the man, for who he was, and all of his life, before, during, after politics, and also a very spontaneous celebration of his accomplishments. And all of this plays in the backdrop of today's politics, by the way. You can't help but also pick that up in the comment, that this sort of sense that this was another era, and regret in the fact that a lot of the things that were true back then just don't seem to be so today. So I find it touching. I find it encouraging to see how much affection there is for him.
Well, and you said you noted it was the 40th anniversary of getting elected. It also, we just had the 30th anniversary of NAFTA. And, you know, NAFTA has now been replaced by a new agreement. But I wonder how you reflect on that. It was one thing, bold enough, to have a free trade agreement with the United States, your largest trading partner in a country that some in Canada feared would swallow you up if we ever removed some of the barriers that we had on trade. But embracing Mexico as well, his famous line, we don't want to be a hub and spoke system, we want to be there. That was really visionary 30 years ago.
It was very visionary. It was courageous. For your listeners who may be less familiar about the story of trade in Canada, it has been a common thread throughout all of Canada's history, from the creation of the country to an attempt to do a free trade agreement in 1911 that defeated the government of Wilfrid Laurier, to Sir John A. Macdonald, our first prime minister, fighting for against a trade agreement. This has been the common line. Now, what Brian Mulroney does is quite adept, because the previous Liberal government had put together a Royal Commission on the Future of Canada. This is after the referendum of 1980 and a huge recession in 81 that really caused a lot of political damage in the country. The commission is chaired by Donald Macdonald, ex-minister of finance, and he comes with a recommendation to engage in a trade agreement. Now, I want to take you back a moment there, Chris and Beth, just sure. to remind you that a good part of the reason for doing this was as much offensive as defensive. Defensive in the way where the argument was put this way: listen, if we, it's not that we're going to go and get all of this or get so much, as we need to do this to protect ourselves from protectionist inclinations, and they're our biggest trading partner. So the framework of arguments changed and evolved with time. Now, what Mulroney did, which was extremely significant historically, was take a whole different approach to the United States. There always was this sense of living next to a giant superpower, a love-hate relationship. Well, Mulroney was very much on the love side and on this side. And unabashedly, he said, you know, they are our friends and our neighbors, and we should do this. And it was very controversial. And people are, it's interesting to see, because time has passed, a lot of people in Canada had no idea because they were young and they didn't see that to be. It was very controversial. It was very courageous on his part, and he carried the debate. When we moved to NAFTA, we did also something that not everyone has remembered. We entered into the first free trade agreement between two highly developed countries and a developing country, Mexico, which in itself brought issues that were new, and we're seeing some of that now in terms of labor mobility, border issues. And so that was also very, very courageous and new. And it was, there was a, in all of this, there was a great leap of faith by Mulroney that he brought the country to, and that he got done. And here we are 30 years later, more than 30 years later, and everyone agrees that this was significant and a good idea.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think you touched on the large policy win, fundamental change that he implemented. But one of my favorite things that has happened recently is just everyone seems to have stories about how personal and connected he was with everyone, how he was always on the phone and calling people. I would love for you to share a little bit of your favorite memory or what you sort of put aside as, you know, the best moment with him.
Well, I'll share a few. When I was a member of parliament, before I entered in cabinet, I had an issue in my writing that was extremely difficult for me. And I couldn't get any attention from the government. I asked to meet him. He's prime minister. And I'm aware that I'm taking the prime minister's time, and I apologize for it. And he says to me, Jean, if this is important for you, it's important for me. And, you know, I learned how to lead and become a leader from Brian Mulroney, because I led my own government and caucus. The other thing, when I was sworn in, he invited me to 24 Sussex to invite me into his government. He asked me He said, John, he said, where's your wife, Michelle? And I said, well, she's going to be joining us tomorrow at the swearing-in. And he said to me that he would never have been Prime Minister of Canada had it not been for his wife, Mila. And with his hands, he joined his hands together to say, we're like this. The other thing he asked me is whether my father would be there. And I said, yes. He said to me, he said, you know, I wanted as a young lawyer to bring my father to a hockey game in the Montreal Forum. And he passed away before I could do that. Here I am. I'm Prime Minister of Canada. And I couldn't do that. And the next day at the ceremony, at the reception, as we walk into the reception room, my father's there, who's from Sherbrooke. And, you know, he's a little shy. And Mulroney, we come face to face. Mulroney says, where's your dad? I said, it's over there. He said, his nickname is Red. He walks over to my dad. Red, how are you? My father. So when we leave the event, I said, Dad, I said, geez, you and Mulroney. He said, oh, yeah, I know Mulroney, you know, I've known him. My dad didn't hang around at Rideau Hall a lot. And I'll just finish with a last. I had resigned from cabinet when I was minister of sport over some controversy about a judge or something. He called my dad. I didn't know that. He called. And said to him, Red, I know this is difficult, but, you know, don't worry. I'll take care of him. So that was, you know, that's the kind of thing that you never forget. And I'll finish with a last one, which is a good life story. When I was sworn in, I was sent to the Cabinet Committee of Treasury Board, which is a high-profile cabinet committee. I'm 28 years old. I've never been in cabinet. There was a journalist who wrote a paper, said, well, what is Charest doing at Treasury Board? What does, unbeknownst to me, Mulroney with the Secretary of the Treasury Board, whose name was Gérard Veilleux. Veilleux said to him, we should identify the up-and-comers, the ones that you want to, you know, really help shape and train. And they chose me. And I only found out about that 20 years later. I had no idea that I had been, you know, chosen. And Mulroney did that. And Veilleux did that to get both of them together. And that was the kind of person he was. That's the kind of attention he would pay to the people around him that he loved.
Mm-hmm. Jean, I want to ask you a little bit about how he approached Americans. I mean, yes, he had a big impact and, of course, a great role at X Across Canada. But when we're talking about a Ronald Reagan or a George H.W. Bush, I think Beth mentioned earlier, just very personal in his trying to build a relationship. Can you reflect on that and where that is today? That are there politicians who do the same in terms of engaging Americans on an equal footing, but with a kind of warmth that you'd see in personal relations?
Well, and to put this in context, Canada has always had sort of a love-hate relationship with our neighbor. Americans are our friends, they're neighbors and allies, but they're 10 times bigger. And the United States is a superpower. And among the challenges that every Canadian prime minister has, among them, we always name a few of them, but the first is to keep the country united. And the second one is to manage the relationship with the United States. For your audience, what you need to keep in mind is that our Americans aren't just neighbors. They are a superpower. The relationship you're managing is that of a relationship with a superpower that has its own impulses, has its own way of, and that's the way the world operates. Now, throughout Canadian history, this has always been a relationship that we've gone back and forth on. And now Mulroney comes to power. He is completely disinhibited on the relationship. It is clear they are our friends, they are our allies, and we and economic partners, and we are very lucky to have each other. Which he is totally right about, by the way. I mean, when you look at the world today, imagine living in this neighborhood, and we complain about it, but I'll tell you, you know, and all only because we were born here, not because of any special genius, here we are in this great neighborhood. And Mulroney understood that, and he said, I'm not shy about being friends to the Americans. And now, he also liked Ronald Reagan. He liked George W. Bush. He liked Americans. He thought they were great. And he didn't feel he was any less of a Canadian because he liked Americans. That was his strength. He could like them without. Reagan's a very interesting story. He was invited to the White House when he was leader of the opposition, because keep in mind, in the British parliamentary system, a prime minister is the leader of Her Majesty's official opposition, and the leader of Her Majesty's official opposition is, in the British parliamentary system, a prime minister in waiting. That's how they are positioned. And when a leader of a foreign country visits Canada, they will typically have a meeting with the leader of the opposition. And from time to time, it's rare, they're invited abroad. Well, Ronald Reagan invites Mulroney to the White House. That's a big deal. What issues is Mulroney going to raise, Chris? Because that is going to, he knows that whatever issues he chooses to raise or not to raise is going to be registered by the American administration. And if he gets into government, that is going to weigh very heavily in the relationship. These are very significant. They're not details of diplomacy. This is important. The issue he raises is acid rain, SO2 emissions. And he did it in good part on the prodding of a member of parliament who was a little older named Stan Darling, who got onto him and said, "Prime Minister, you have to raise this." And he did. So there he sets the stage for what will eventually become, in 1990, the Clean Air Act. And so that's, for me, demonstrates his ability and his understanding. But back to the beginning, he decides, you know what? We're friends with Americans, and I'm not going to be shy about it. And which means we can agree and disagree, but they're allies. And I went to Rio. I was the head of Canada's delegation at the IRF summit. We're asked by Maurice Strong, who's running the summit, to be the first country of the G7 to sign onto the Climate Change Convention, which is the issue of our generation, because Maurice says to me, we need to break the logjam, and Canada, you should be the first to sign. I called the prime minister. I said, "Brian, you know, this is what Maurice Strong's asking us to do." And he said, he asked me my advice. I said, "We should." And his response was, "I want you to call Bill Riley," who was the EPA administrator at the time, "before you make any announcement. And I want you to tell him that we're going to do this. And I want you to tell him why we're doing it. I don't want our American friends to be taken by surprise. I want them to know." And these are the kind of things that he understood that gave so much strength and trust to the relationship and allowed us to get things done.
That's so impressive. And I had a chance to meet William Riley, and he was such a fan of Canada because Canada knew how to do things, and he felt respected by Canada and saw the Canadians as that kind of first class of country where everything was done properly. And I wonder too, sometimes it seems like there are Canadians who are afraid to approach the Americans in that way. You know, they may be worried that they're going to get strong-armed, but Mulroney never worried about being strong-armed.
He had no complex in that way. He didn't feel that Americans, that we were, a sub-country of the United States. And that was what made his strength. The interesting attitude. And by that attitude, he got, and there's plenty of times where he said no, American administration. And you may remember the Reagan project about Star Wars. They've called it Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And he concluded that, no, we're not going to. But the way he handled it, there's a major disagreement on the Northwest Passage, which the Americans to this day continue to claim wrongfully, may I add, that it's an international waterway in Canada. Rightfully states that it's our territory, our country. And he was able to manage that in a way where both sides could agree to disagree without having making it an issue that would weigh on the relationship.
Impressive.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, I think just hearing you share these stories, it really is proving, like, his legacy is living on. The relationship, the way that his approach of the relationship is so important, and I think is really sort of a testament to where we can continue to go as two countries who collaborate and, you know, face the world challenges together. So, I mean, it really just means so much to us that you were able to take the time and share your stories. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much. If there's anything you haven't been able to share today that you want to get out, we don't want to cut you off, but I just, you know, want to say thank you so much.
I want to thank you because the Canada American Business Council does exceptional work in keeping this relationship in good shape. And so does the Wilson Center and the Canada Institute. Christopher, both you and Beth, you probably underestimate the importance of the work that you do. I do not, and neither should other people. And because we're going to have an extraordinary period in front of us of changes, and we know the political environment's very challenging. So thank you both for what you're doing, and I hope that you're going to continue to give us some guidance and some help as we make our way through the next few years.
Always.
We absolutely will. And can I squeak in one little question? I'm imagining you during some of the tough years when Pierre Trudeau was prime minister and the Canada-US relationship was getting into some rocky territory. If you could speak to the 28-year-old or the 25-year-old or whatnot who's listening to this today, what would you tell them about? Because I worry that sometimes when you talk about somebody's past, it's just the old guys telling old stories, you know. Well, not Beth. She's very young. But for young people today, is Mulroney's example relevant or was it only of its time? And would you embrace politics and have hope that we could have that kind of relationship again if there's someone in the shoes you were in way back then might want to take up the challenge and get into politics?
Chris, you're asking an interesting question because we could easily confuse context with values. The context would be very different for someone like Brian Mulroney today, but the values he espoused, they are more important than ever before. Respect, understanding the other side, having a sense of history and what is right and what is wrong, and having the courage to do what is right, even if unpopular, because you have a responsibility toward the people who elected you to do that. All the things that he believed in, whether it were today or another time, have not changed. And we celebrate his life, we celebrate him, but we celebrate those values. And it can't be otherwise. We will also be celebrating the extraordinary relationship between both Canada and the United States by celebrating his life.
Fantastic. That's the inspirational quote I was hoping for. Jean Charest, you belong on Canusa Street. You could be mayor of Canusa Street if you wanted.
Yes, I love it. You got my vote.
Okay. Well, I'll be delighted. I want to be a fan of Canusa Street, and so I'll be listening in, and I look forward to seeing you both in person. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Wonderful.
Take care. Bye bye.
This podcast is brought to you by the Canadian American Business Council and the Wilson Center. If you like this episode, help others find our show and give us a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.